All right, guys, tonight we're going to be talking to Ileana Partida, a true trailblazer in the world of tequila, and I am so excited to hear her story. How are you doing tonight?
Very, very honored to be here with you. So thank you so much for inviting me. And hi to all your audience. I'm very glad if they're watching.
Well, I'm excited that you've taken your time. You know, we talk to a lot of like brand owners, and this is the first time that we've got to talk to somebody that's not only a brand owner, but a master distiller, and also the owner of NAM 1522 Hacienda de Oro, right in Ataman, Jalisco. And you don't only have a tequila, you know how to make tequila and make tequila for other people. And if I'm not mistaken, the distillery was founded in like 1999. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's correct. Hacienda de Oro was built in 1999, but we have history since four generations back then. By growing agaves and building like a community tequila distillery back then in the 70s. And then another distillery, and this is the third distillery, and my father has another distillery so far. So yes, we've been in the business for a few time.
I knew that your whole family legacy was rooted in distilling. And if I'm not mistaken, you're the youngest of your siblings, the only woman of your siblings, and now you've taken on being the CEO and master distiller of your family distillery. So there's got to be some excitement that comes from that. Are you really excited to be able to do that?
I was excited until I'm here. And say like, oh, I didn't know it was this tough. I didn't know what I was doing when I asked for it, you know? So yes, closing up, I'm not exactly the youngest. I'm the middle kid. And they always say like okay. The middle kid is the one that causes the most troubles in the family. So yes, I was very pushed into, I don't know, I was kind of a perfectionist. So I want like everybody was running in place, and that got me into the direction that I have right now. But yes, I mean, speaking about my brothers, I think they all four are completely talented, knowledgeable about the distillery, about the agaves, about, I don't know, all you need to know to be able to be in this business. But I don't know, I'm guessing I'm the more, let's do it now. And that's it. That's how I got here.
That's awesome. Did you always see yourself being in the tequila business, and kind of how did you get your start to knowing that you wanted to do this?
Yeah, no, I don't think I ever believed. I mean, I was here since I was a little kid, and I helped my mom on the bottling line, for example. And then I helped my father like giving samples to the people, you know, with my piece of a lot of samples, like since I was a teenager. But I never really pictured myself like managing the distillery, to be honest. I don't know. It's just like something that you're doing right now, but probably I'm going to be following another path. I didn't know what I was doing. I did knew I wanted to be a businesswoman. I had that very clear. And I did work or I used to own a restaurant, a bar. I was working on sales on any other projects, and I realized that tequila is a great experience, because it's one of the few things that Mexico has for the full world, for the whole world, right? And mm-hmm. I was not really appreciating my own legacy or my own destiny. And so like, you have to be a fool to not being in this business. And it was because, you know, it's a tequila industry. All I can see was men everywhere, you know? I didn't have, like, a role model, because my mom was on the bottling line. And so, like, well, yes, but I don't want to be on the bottling line, to be honest. I want to be there, like, taking decisions about the money, the investments, and everything that you have to do on a business, the marketing, the sales, getting to know people all over the world. And I just didn't see myself in that place on the tequila distillery. It was my father and my brothers, and they're taking all the decisions. But at some point I say, like, well, what if I push? What if I speak louder? What if I just ask for it? What if I do it myself? So at some moment I start working for another facility, and that's when they realized that it was their loss if they didn't ask me things or get me into the administration or the decision making, right? So I decided, because my dad was insistent on coming back to the distillery, and he promised me to let me take some decisions. So I came back. It was different. It was very difficult. I think the dynamic that you find in a family is very different than the ones that you have in a corporation. And I didn't knew that until I was working into a corporation, right? So when I came back, all these family dynamics were completely different. I just saw it in another way that I had never, I don't know, was conscious about. So I started asking a lot of questions about, but why? Why? How? When? You know, these famous KPIs that keeps you accountable in your jobs. So I was asking these type of questions to all my brothers. Nobody liked it, of course, but I was asking them. And at some moment they realized, like, okay, then you do it. I will do it. My pleasure. So I started taking more responsibility, and that's what it got me here. I think I was very responsible since I was a little child, and I didn't knew what it was coming after that. And it hasn't been easy. There's a lot of choices that you don't want to take. It's really hard. But at the end of the day, I will keep being persistent, because I know for sure that I can make a difference. And when someone in the town called me, or even write a message through Instagram, for example, and says, oh, Ileana, I also want to be a master distiller. I also want to run a facility. I also want to have my own brand. It's like, oh my God, you don't know what you want, but I'm appreciating that you notice, right? And that I can be like an example for you. And if I have something to teach you, come to my office. I will let you know everything you have to know so that you don't have the same mistakes that I had previously. So if I can teach everyone what I know, what I've been through, and if I help, especially the women that are more vulnerable in this industry, well, I will, of course, help them. And if that makes this industry a little bit better, then that's what I'm here for. I hope
that makes great sense. And, you know, I've interviewed several people recently that all of their distillers are female master distillers. And I know that's a growing thing in tequila, and it's an exciting thing, because I've found that a lot of the tequilas, when I pull them off my shelf, that are female master distillers, sometimes they make it's a more approachable tequila in some cases, and also some of them have like a more floral nose and just have a little bit deeper, sometimes a deeper flavor that you know, it's like, oh, did who's the master distiller on this? Like, I think this is a female master distiller, because there's several that it just seems like you guys are rocking it right now. So that's pretty cool.
Yes, I do think they are more refined. I think this is strongness that some of the tequila I used to have, we were not going to be seeing that often in the new tequilas that are going out. I think we're looking for a more refined, more premium tequila to place out there. And I think people are loving it. People are appreciating those tequilas. And yes, I believe, I don't know, how do you taste the tequila? In my panel tasting, because I don't want to do things by my own, I have a panel tasting. And when we submit, the woman always has like more recognition of certain types of aromas. And, you know, so it helps you a lot on the feedback when you're making one tequila. So I think we have a lot to offer, to be honest. And if there are some distillery that doesn't have any women on their decision making, they're losing it.
Well, you know, men usually make bad decisions and women usually make good decisions. So at least that's in my 35 years of marriage, I can actually admit to that for sure.
I can confirm that.
Yeah, I can confirm that 100%.
I think it's everything about balance, right? I cannot speak only about women. Of course, I love to, but I have only brothers and I have only sons. So, I mean, I have to appreciate their effort also. And I'm trying to teach them how to be strong men. I mean, we need strong men. We don't need misogyny, of course. We have to delete that. And to be honest, sometimes feminism gets just too far. It always has to be a balance between these two forces. The two are strong in their own ways, and we need both forces in overall balance, world balance, right? So, I mean, yes, this is not only about women. I think we just have to find that balance on where we can find a relationship that is a win-win situation.
Yeah, that was very well said. I agree with you. So tell me about some of the brands at your distillery and tell me about the brands that are yours.
Okay, so the brands that I produce in my distillery, well, the ones that are owned by Hacienda de Oro, which is the distillery, is Ultimo Agave, Hacienda de Oro, and Amatitense. Ultimo Agave has been in the USA since, I think, 2001. And it's mainly in, you know, the markets, California, Texas, Arkansas, and Georgia. And Amatitense is not a new brand, but we haven't shipped that to the USA yet. So in that brand, what we are doing is that I'm making three different batches, a small batch, and then at the end of it, I'm blending. Why? Because I'm making one small batch with the original recipe of my grandfather. And then I'm doing a second batch with my father's recipe. And I'm doing the third batch of my own recipe. So what I want to be able to do or to share to the world is a product that has the three generations in one bottle. And that's Amatitense. That's what Amatitense stands for. And I'm pretty sure we're going to be on California by March.
Well, I'll be driving through your town in a couple of days. So hopefully I can stop by somewhere and pick one of those up.
Please come to the studio. We will have a great tasting together. And we have also a great view, as I mentioned. So you're going to love it. Looking forward.
I now have your WhatsApp, so you will get a message.
My WhatsApp.
And you have a lot of great brands that come out of your distillery as well. You know, I know a couple of them and I've had several of them. Yes. And there's a couple that I've really wanted to try. Do you have a lot of interaction with the other brands that aren't yours that are coming out of your distillery as well?
Of course, I'm a kind of perfectionist. I love to oversee all the process that is going. And yes, about the other brands that I think that I truly love, for example, is Quinta Lisa, Elevación 1250, and you know, Entre Manos also. So Entre Manos and Dos Angeles, for example, are a collaboration with Jaime Villalobos, who has also many years in the industry. And I started working with him like 6 years ago. I mean, we know, our parents know each other since many, many years ago, but we started working together like 6 years ago, actually as master distillers and taking decisions on the production line since 5 years ago, probably. So those are also brands that I think are standing out in the US market because the quality of their products. And I also love the design that they have. You know, they're like very unique. Yes, bottles and the profile, of course. And I always believe that two have things better than one. So being able to collaborate with people that are knowledgeable and willing to educate the people is also another great thing that I love to do in my job.
That's awesome. So here's a question I have that we talk about several things as people on the internet, right? All of us goofy people that do these shows on the internet. And I talk about the difference between an authentic tequila and a traditional tequila. And then, of course, everybody talks about additives. What's your take on the difference in that industrial made tequila to what you make as a traditional tequila? And then what's your thought on the way additives are being used in tequilas today?
Well, that's a good question, because I think, I don't know any people that has a micro distillery that will tell you, oh yes, we love Casamigos. I mean, nobody is going to tell you that. And nobody that knows the tequila process will tell you that. I mean, let's be honest, the people that are in the industry will drink that and say, like, this is not tequila. But let's be realistic. I mean, the numbers speak also by themselves. So there's a lot of people that doesn't have any knowledge about tequila and that are preferring to take something that doesn't taste like tequila. But I think that's like a gate for the people that were not consuming tequila, because we are also carrying this strong or bad reputation about how drinking tequila is so bad for your health. You're going to have very bad hangovers on the next day. So if the people are open the door through these bad tequilas to get to know or giving a second chance to new tequilas, okay, that's it. That's what the number says. But I really wish that this podcast or these interviews opens the mind of the people and they are even more willing to go deeper on the industry. And they're not afraid of smelling a tequila that is extremely herbal or aromatic, and they don't feel that they're going to be with a hangover on the next day. Because we know that a tequila that is very well produced doesn't supposed to be these really bad hangovers on the next day if it is 100%, if it doesn't have any additives. But I mean, those tequilas exist. We cannot just forget about them. We have to be careful of what we are recommending to our friends, because if you know better, then let's talk to your friends that they have to know better also. But I mean, they're selling a lot. So I can only wish for the people to be more interested in another innovations. Probably can be, a tequila can be naturally sweet, not excessive. I mean, we're not eating candies. We're not eating smoothies. Let's realize that tequila is a strong spirit, but it will be better for your health probably, and it will be better for the industry itself if you start having a better recognition and appreciation of the original aromas of the tequila. And now that women is distiller or taking charge, being on charge of the batches, probably will be more refined. And probably we will be taking these customers that believe that that's a good tequila, going back to the traditional way of making tequila by feeling the tequila way more softer than they probably did a few generations ago.
Yeah, that's a great explanation. You know, I tell my friends all the time, you don't get a hangover drinking good tequila. You get a hangover drinking bad tequila. So what you guys are doing and the way that you're doing it is a great thing for us to be able to share and teach for people to know. When you go into the liquor store or you're at the bar, look for these brands, you know, look for this style. So since we're talking about production method a little bit, I'd love to hear what the production methods you have there at your distillery, and then what are some of the different production methods that you do between different tequilas to make a different profile flavored tequila coming from the same distillery? That's another thing that people need to understand, that I can get three tequilas from that distillery and they're going to taste different. And their question is always why. So maybe you can go into those production methods that kind of teach the how and the why.
Yeah, sure. For example, in our distillery, right now we only have autoclaves. As I mentioned, probably my father also owns another distillery on where we have big oven and autoclave. So you can play more when you have like two options. But in Hacienda de Oro, we only have autoclave. I'm proud to say that I'm building a big oven this year. So probably in the next year, we will be trying something made only by Greek oven. So the cooking method is the first method. Well, actually, no. The first step is going to be the agave, right? Because probably it's not going to be the same agave if you are planting on the valley or a hill or a canyon. So the elevation is going to make some differences, a small difference on the agave, but it will affect how it develops and the sugar level that it has. So probably one agave from the canyon, it won't be tasting the same in terms of sugar and in other areas, rather than against one from the hill, for example. So picking a field is going to be like your first choice. That's why from one distillery, if I am only using, if I am only contemplating the agave, if I'm picking one field and then the next field, the tequila will be completely different. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's the first step. And that's just the first thing. The second will be the cooking. So in Hacienda de Oro, we have, it depends on the private level. We set up what is going to be, how many hours we will be cooking. We have conversation with the private label and we agree on what is going to be kind of the hours that we are. So in order to fulfill the cooking, we are adding, if we are missing 1 hour of cooking, then we're putting more hours on the resting part. So let's say if I cook for 10 hours and I usually rest for another 10 hours, which is going to be like a total of 20 hours, that will be different if I probably cook 9 hours, but I leave longer the rest. So it's going to be like probably an extra 2 hours on the resting part. So we have nine hours of cooking, and then the resting is going to be like 12 hours, for example. So those small details can change how the caramels or how the sugars transform and how much caramel you will have at the end of it. If you cook for too long, of course, you're going to be having more caramel. It won't be fermentable, but you will also have different notes. So you don't want to cross the line when you burn the agave, but you can play a little bit with it, right? Just like when you're having a meal or a really big steak, like you want like kind of medium, or you leave it a little bit more, right on the edge of well-cooked, well-done, for example. And it's going to taste a little bit different. The efficiency is going to be different also. So that's a decision making that we as producers and the private labels do together. Then the next step is going to be the roller mirror. To be honest, we haven't done changes in that because that's all about extracting the juices of the agave. We do own a Taona. So a combination or a blend of using a roller mill and a Taona is going to give you a different profile. The Taona is less efficient. So again, you're changing something on the profile and it's going to be completely different. When I say completely different, probably there's a few people that will smell this tequila and say like, it's basically the same. Well, you have to learn how to detect those aromas. You know what I mean? And yes, it takes a while. I mean, it's not exactly like since your first shot and you're going to be an expert on the tasting notes, but that's okay. I mean, once you have tried like 10 blancos or 100 blancos or 1,000 blancos, or when you are smelling the blanco every single day of your life for the last 5 years, trust me, you became an expert at smelling blancos. So the extraction will be the next step. And after that is going to be the fermentation. So on the fermentation, you can use no yeast. You can use a yeast, and there's a lot of yeast. You can use yeast from champagne. You can use whiskey. You can use beer. There's some yeast that are meant to be for the tequila or that are developed to use in the tequila. And you can also just find the yeast like naturally on the agaves. So that's why it ferments, even if you don't add any yeast. And it's going to be different because when you are adding yeast, and if the yeast is really efficient, you can have a fermentation of 3 days, for example. But when you are not using yeast, you can have a fermentation from around 9 days, for example, which is 3 times more. And in this scenario, the aromas are very different. Let's just picture that you have a pineapple in your kitchen and then you're smelling the pineapple and it smells like sweet, kind of citric. But if you leave that pineapple for 2 weeks, trust me, the aromas are going to be very different, but it is still smelling like pineapple. Make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's what happened in the fermentation. I mean, if you leave it longer, the aromas are going to be affected by other bacteria or scenarios, and where you're going to find like more malolactic aromas that you didn't find on the previous one when you were only spending 3 days of fermentation. So you have this gap of 3 days until 9 days. It depends a lot on how you're working, what is the weather, for example, but it's going to be a different tequila for sure. And the final step, well, not exactly final, at least for the blancos, is going to be the distillation. And again, you can cut the heads. You can not cut them because they're very aromatic. There's a lot of tequilas that you probably don't want in your body, but there's a lot of aromas also there. So you can play with the cuts, or you can just put them all in your tequila, and it's going to be different. So when we are giving tours in the distillery, we give them samples of how heads, tails, and the heart smells, so that people can actually analyze the aromas on every single step on the distillation, just the distillation. So that's how you blend your tequila, and that's how you make a profile different from the other. And that's how you get a blanco. And of course, if you want to continue with rosas or joven, reposado, añejo, and extrañejo, then can you imagine how many types of barrels you can actually use? The most common is the American white oak, which is good. And they are usually from whiskey, for example. But we've been playing with ron, with cognac, with Cabernet Sauvignon, with Malbec, with Tempranillo. And of course, all of those tequilas has nothing to do. And if I start making blends with all these three, well, it's going to be a lot of tequilas profiles that are, I bet probably they're not in the market, or they do are. And that's how you have 1,000 tequilas in one shelf. But yes, of course, it's possible to have one distillery and way many different profiles.
Okay, that was a great explanation. That was fantastic. So one of the things we didn't touch on is water. So are you guys all deep well water at your distillery?
Yes, we do. And of course, there's two cleaning processes. One before the extraction, so we can use that minerality that naturally has the water. And an extra one that probably takes away all the minerality, but that's on purpose because that's when we are cutting the tequila. So yes, if I am doing a 40% alcohol tequila, that means 60% is water. So the source of this water is going to be way more relevant than people believe or that people recognize. And I think one of the qualities of this distillery is that we are so close to the volcano of tequila that the minerality that we bring to the tequila process is going to be also unique.
Yeah, there's three things that I believe that are the terroir of a tequila, right? You have the agave and where it was grown and where it came from. And then you have, you know, your natural yeast and your open fermentation. That's your next place that really brings your terroir into that. And then, of course, the water. Everybody's water tastes a little different. Your well water is going to taste different at each well that you have. So that was such a great teaching and explanation. And I like how you talked about the longer fermentation time. So the question I have about that is, you know, we talk about these tequilas that have that malolactic funk, that funkiness, that cheesiness, and some of those are my favorite, yeah. Right? Is that from the fermentation time and the fermentation temperatures that creates that funkiness? Are there other parts into that?
No, it mostly comes from that part, at least what I have perceived. And we are now using like the stainless steel, but I have noticed that it's stronger when you are using wood fermentation, which we didn't mention before. But yes, I had noticed that these notes are way stronger when you are using wood in the fermentation. So yes, I think that's the majority. And after that, I believe that when you have a reposado or an añejo, because of this wood and because of this funkiness, you may also make these aromas more exponential, right? I think the wood helps a lot to those notes to be more present.
Yeah, it's hard for me to explain to people when I say this one is a cheesy funky smell. It sounds like such a negative thing to say, but that it has that flavor in it, which is a really neat profile that when the agave is on top of that, it smells so good. And it's so hard to explain to somebody,
it is,
hey,
hard.
Why don't you smell my cheesy basement?
I know. And another word that it shocked me, it was like this earthiness. It's like, who wants earth on his spirit? You know, it's like, what are you talking about? But once you get familiar, it's like, oh my God, I love this earthiness. I love this, I don't know, like wet soil. I don't know, it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
But once you're getting it, and once someone explains that to you, you say like, it makes all sense. And why is this happening? Oh, because of the barrel, because of the storage, because of the, yes, just makes sense. So that's why you have to try like all the blancos and all the reposados that are out there. You cannot just focus in one celebrity brand. No, you have to try them all. That's it.
Also, your explanation of the cuts of how heads, hearts, and tails make such a big difference. And I know there's some tequilas out there that are, you know, just hearts only. And then if you're going to try to push that still strength, you got to leave some of those heads in there to get that still strength up high enough. So heads and hearts are usually pretty good together, but tails, those are always out, right?
Yes, I think, I think a good tequila has all this complexity of aromas, right? And I think this is where the industry is going. When we were speaking about how the tequilas or the three generations ago tequilas, this is where the tequila is getting more refined, right? And this is also one big difference on small distilleries and the big distilleries, because a big distillery won't be cutting the tails, you know, like two off, because they're wasting money. They're saying like, no, we still have some proof over there that we can go down and look how many liters we can take away. And on a small distillery and on a more refined tequila, yes, of course, you will be cutting everything that is more like vinagre, like vinegar, which is usually the smell on the tails. So I think this is a good example where the new tequilas that are coming out doesn't have that many tails, and probably, yes, but they're probably more approachable to the common consumer, right? The ones that are not expert is like, oh yeah, this smells good. Just the aromatic part and not exactly the weird, cheesy part. But for an expert that can appreciate and say like, oh, this is probably a good smell. So, I mean, there's a lot of grays between the black and white. So I think, yes, you have to just find the right amount that is going to be good for your customer.
And that's where, tell me if I'm wrong, where some of these industrial tequilas that are using a column still and continuous distilling can move so much more product through that column still quicker. And they're not cutting any heads or tails out of that at all, correct?
Correct. And that's why you need to filter that much that tequila so it doesn't smell weird, like truly weird. And that's why you have to add additives. Because if it is natural, well, it tastes or smells kind of funky, kind of weird, and people won't love it. So they have to filter a lot so they can place or add some aromas that you can actually identify or that are well known as vanilla, let's say. And that's where the people believe that's the natural aroma of tequila, which is not. So, but yes, I mean, that's how the world works. I think if the small distilleries doesn't change their production methods, and instead of putting one diffuser, they just keep adding autoclaves or brick ovens, I think the industry is going to be on a better path. And to be honest, I don't judge the diffuser I don't like the diffuser, but I remember when we started and we have our production line with brick ovens, we achieve a point on sales where the importer is start asking for more tequila. So we did take the decision to take down the brick oven in order to place some autoclaves on the production part. Because at some moment, there's a saying that goes, you're out of stock, out of market, out of business, right? Mm-hmm. So the importer is like trying to push you too far until, because you have to achieve the numbers. I mean, you just can't go back. So, and I think we made that. So I'm not sure. I bet at some moment this history that has diffuser used to have bridges or autoclaves, and at some point the demand was so high they just can't keep up. And let's be honest, a diffuser is way more efficient. But of course, there's going to be people that continues appreciating the legacy of the tequila that was well made with Rigoben or autoclaves. And let's hope it continues. And at some moment, I think it would be more smart to continue a development from brick ovens on the street instead of changing everything to a diffuser. I think the big corporation just teach us that. That is not the right way. The people won't appreciate it. Or probably they do. I mean, there's a lot of things going on the street. There's a lot of celebrity brands. But this is a marathon, not a sprint. So let's see in 5 years or 10 years, what is the better market? If you remember, like 10 years ago, the most selling tequila was Mixto, for example.
Right.
That was the most popular. Everybody was drinking Mixto. Nobody cared. So someone realized that 100% now is better. And that has switched everything. Now everybody wants 100%, right? So probably the next is going to be, okay, are you using bricks? Are you using autoclave? Are you using additives? Those are the same conversations or the new conversation that are leading the idea of tequila to a better way.
Yeah, you know, in America, we've really switched to really worrying about what's in our food. We're concerned about, you know, I can't read any of the ingredients on this box. And for instance, my wife and I, we go and we like Coca-Cola, but we go to a store here locally where we can buy Mexican Coca-Cola because it's sugarcane and it tastes better. And I know what's in my body. And when you're looking at, you know, the way tequilas are made, these traditional tequilas, it's agave yeast and water. And I don't have to worry about something that I don't know that's in there. And I couldn't do it 2 years ago, be able to pick up a glass of tequila and go, whoa, that was a diffuser and that's got additives in there. But I can today, right? And we've seen so many brands switch their production methods to say, you know, okay, this is our roller mill autoclave product, but hey, here's our new product that's now made with a tahona in a brick oven and a limited edition still strength or high proof, you know. And that's the aficionados love that. I an autoclave doesn't bother me in the tequila. You know, I have a lot of good low and slow autoclave tequilas that are just as good as a stone oven. And roller mill to tahona, sometimes there's you get maybe a little more flavor out of a tahona tequila that the average person isn't going to taste. But a diffuser tequila, I can usually tell 9 times out of 10. Right, that you lose that agave forward true sweetness. So I believe we'll see a trend back to traditional tequilas more than what we've seen in the last few years. Do you think that's kind of the move that's coming as well?
Yes, for sure, for sure. I mean, people is starting appreciating way more. We already speak how the 100% is more sellable right now than the mixed though. And yep. I think yes. In the 100%, we're looking for these no additives or only three ingredients that are growing very good and very fast. So that's for sure the next thing going on. And probably I will hope and wish that the people also start asking about how are we giving or caring about society, about the communities that we are located. And I will honestly love to see more brand owners that are Mexican also, because I think that's important. I think it's a more a win-win situation where we have a great product, you have great customers, and it could just be, and everybody wins, you know, not this huge corporation that comes and make a whole contamination of our communities. But I would love to see people that actually care. Christiana is doing a great job by the water sourcing. I'm trying to do my best to employ more women. I have 60% of my employment of women also. Wow. And to try to train them so we can source talents from the town to be able to take them to all over the world to speak about tequila. So if you invite more Mexican women to your podcast, that will be
Christiana has been on the show.
Awesome.
Yeah. We've done a lot with her Juana Buenta Foundation, and I've been so impressed with her. And again, as a person that's, you know, visited Mexico a lot and really love the whole, I love the Mexican people, the tradition, the friendliness, the openness that I'm somewhere back in my history, there has to be a Mexican in my family, I hope, because it's my favorite food, my favorite drink, my favorite place to visit, and my favorite people. And knowing that how the companies take from your area and don't give back, that's the part for me that I want to try my best to give back to the community of the people there that make this beautiful juice. And, you know, I agree with you on Mexican-owned companies and the people that are working there and owning the companies and being able to take care of the people, that to me is, that's really important. And it's another thing I like to teach.
Yeah, sorry. And sometimes you don't have to do that much. I mean, just by helping or spreading the word of the company actually located in this community, you're already helping us. I mean, you know what I mean? It's not like you have to donate. No, I mean, just by spreading the word, making this podcast, letting people know what is going on in Mexico, and we will be taking care of our own people, of the agave growers, of the girls in the bottling line, of the producers on the shredder, on the distillation. We're taking care of our people. That's why we try to be better leaders every single day, every single year that we're spending in this industry. And you're all helping. So that's all you have to do. Buy good tequila.
Well, there's a lot of it up here. Okay, so here's a question for you. Since you started doing this, since you became Jefe, what is the biggest surprise that you just weren't expecting when you became the boss, the person that has the buck stops here, the person that's in charge? What's the biggest surprise that you've had?
The biggest surprise? That's a good question. I have never thought about it. The biggest surprise, I don't know. I always say when somebody asks me, like, how is it like? And I always say, it's like a roller coaster. Don't get up. I mean, sometimes you're here, sometimes you're just going down like really fast, nonstop. And then you feel like peace when you're going a little bit up, but you're going back again. So it's like every single day there's something going on that I meant, I don't know. Sometimes it's difficult. What it can be, I think problems about supply chains, for example, is always going to happen, you know, like for Amatite, for example, that we haven't launched or sent to USA Amatitense, because the first time that we have the bottles and the caps and everything, the bottles and the cap didn't fit together. It was a nightmare. I bought like 10,000 of those things and they didn't fit. It was like, why? So go back to the supplier and say like, now it's your problem. And say like, what? But do you have a reimbursement or something? And say like, well, I can give you another one, or we can make a new mold and then a new cap. And say like, what are you talking about? I mean, yes, you have to do it, but for free. I won't pay that. So those kind of stories are my day-to-day. So those are not nice surprises, let me be honest. nice surprises is, I don't know, when someone recognizes you or say like, oh, I tried your tequila, I saw your tequila, and I love it. And I was like, really? But those are really surprises when someone recognizes your job or even the distillery or I don't know, whatever. I think those are the nice surprises. When I was in, I think in New York, and someone approached and knew the brand and had tasted the brand and had loved the brand, like, oh, this is what I'm here, right? And yes, I mean, about stories, I've been giving tastings in a lot of parts, like Shanghai, like Istanbul, like Germany, like Canada, like Panama, like Colombia, because of the Tequila Chamber that invited me to do or to represent them in these scenarios. So there are always nice surprises because you see the people and how they care about the tequila and how they love it and how they spend the whole day speaking about how the first tequila tasting was and where this new tequila is. And those are nice surprises where you say like, oh, tequila is well recognized all over the world, which makes us privileged and honored to actually be born here, not only in Amatitán, but in Napa City. So those things are the ones that dreaming and wanted to do more in this industry.
That's a great answer. That's awesome. You covered like so many things in there. So that gives us a little insight into your world and how you do what you do. And I appreciate that.
Thank you, Brad.
So where can people in the United States find your particular brands? And do you have a website that people can go to? And what are those brands that we can promote on here for people to go look for?
Well, of course, you can always follow us in social media. It's Tequilera Hacienda de Oro. And that's where we put updates about where we are selling. And I know that in California, we are in Vallarta Markets and Food for Less with El Último Agave. And as I mentioned, Amatense is not in the USA yet. We're going to be releasing that March. So stay tuned on our social media. And I think other brands, like, for example, Quintaliza or Elevación 1250, you can find that at mctequila.com, which is also a very interesting place. And sipsy.com has also some of our products from the NOM 1522. Yes, it was Vallarta Markets, Sip Tequila, sipsy.com. And just stay tuned to our social media so you can know more places.
Perfect. And I'll put all of those in the website or in the video so people can see. And then I'll also list some of the other brands that come from your distillery so people can find those as well. There's some fantastic brands coming from your distillery. And I really appreciate your time. I know how busy you are. And I think this is a lot of great information for people. I appreciate you reaching out, and I'm going to put my eyes out for your brands.
Thanks.
And when we are traveling through your town, I will probably drop you a message, let you know what time we're coming through, and maybe I can swing by and grab that brand that I can't find in the States.
Yes, please. And thank you so much for inviting me. It's been a pleasure. I hope I meet you soon. And yes, mi casa, whenever you're near, please come by. It will be my honor to attend you.
Well, thank you very much. And salute. I don't know if you have a glass, but I always have a glass of tequila here. So salute. And I appreciate you very much.
Thanks to you. Have a nice one.
Thank you.
Thank you.